This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Athos Syrianos joining me here in the studio. It's great to have your company this evening as we wrap up everything that happened at the weekend, including the A-League Grand Final. There was a little bit of controversy, which we will get to shortly. The Herald Sun's Dave Davidovich will be joining us at 5:15pm Australian Eastern Standard Time. And after that, Fox Sports analyst Scott Miller will also be on the show at 5:30pm. And after that, we'll look at everything that's going on in Europe, because there's always plenty of action there.
Yeah, a few leagues wrapped up over the weekend in Spain and in Germany, and the race for the top four in Italy heats up. But Louise, we must, of course, shift our attention, or for the time being, to the A-League Grand Final. And there was a bit of news as well today. Melbourne Victory just couldn't help themselves. They had to be the centre of attention once again, with, of course, Kevin Muscat stepping down as Victory coach after 14 wonderful years at the club. So plenty to get through, and is why we've got a big show. And of course, you are welcome to join in the discussion at any time, 03 99 99 99, or comment below on our Facebook Live.
Yes, please get involved. We'd love to hear from you, whether you are a Sydney FC fan, a Perth Glory fan, or just a fan in general who wants to get involved in the discussion. Now, going straight to the A-League Grand Final, Sydney FC have clinched a record equaling fourth A-League championship after defeating Perth Glory 4-2 on penalties.
Full-on Irishman Andy Keogh. There's the Wiggles routine from Redmayne. Andy Keogh, saved by Redmayne. The dancing around on the line has worked. He's outside Andy Keogh. Redmayne's made one very big save. Again, he dances around. Oh, and Santelat went for the Panenka, and it did not pay off. And Sydney FC are almost there. Reza Gushanajet has the responsibility. The Iranian, who's only been with the club a few months, can write his name into folklore here. If he can make it 4-1, it's done. Liam Reddy was a hero in this situation last week for Perth. He has to be again here, or it's all over for Perth. Gushanajet scores! And against the Premiers, against all odds, a long way from home, it is Sydney FC who are the champions of Australia for a record equaling fourth.
With thanks to Fox Sports, yes, Sydney FC wrapping up the A-League Grand Final, defeating Perth Glory 4-1 on penalties. Such a cruel way for the Glory to go out. They were clearly the best team all season. They'd wrapped up the Premier's plate and just fell short on penalties.
You couldn't separate either side, really. The officials and the VAR certainly didn't help either. And we can sort of sweep that under the rug now, as Sydney FC got the win, so we avoid all that backlash and controversy. But for Perth Glory, they saved their probably one of their worst performances for the season right to the grand final, almost like what Melbourne Victory did last week. And Sydney FC, as Simon Hill mentioned just then, won their third grand final on penalty shootouts, and they join Sydney City, Marconi, South Melbourne and Melbourne Victory on four Australian championships. So they're in quite some esteemed company there. They did very well to get the 3 points. And remember, at the start of the season, their championship-winning coach, Graham Arnold, left. Adrian Mijajewski, the player of the season, and the golden boot winner, Bobo, left too. So even though there was still plenty of that championship-winning side there, there was still a big responsibility and a big task ahead of Steve Corica. And I think he has to be received a lot of praise for what he's been able to do this year.
And I mean, the first goal looked so crucial, but it never came.
Yeah, it felt like
after 90 minutes, it was nil all. After extra time, it was nil all. And then you knew it was going into penalties.
And chances were few and far between as well. Neither side really penetrated a whole heap. It was a massive arm wrestle for a lot of the game. Both teams, I thought, defended quite well. I was particularly intrigued by the battle between Ryan Grant and Jason Davidson, two players who we've had on FNR, two very good players, have both represented Australia. And I thought that was such an amazing subplot to the big grand final.
And you could see Jason was just running for days, as was Ryan. Ryan was like getting up and down that wing as high as he could. And, you know, you're right. They just couldn't convert. And for all their luck, they kept crossing in the balls, both teams, and none of them just wanted to go in the back of the net. It was just frustrating because we know that throughout the season they could produce a lot more.
Yeah, as we know, Perth Glory, the best attacking team, the best defensive team, statistically speaking. They've scored the most goals and conceded the least. I thought the longer the game went on without a goal, it was all the better for Sydney FC. We know this season they've won, or they've been masters of winning those gritty 1-0 type of games. It's why they've been so unnoticed up until now, really, because they just kept doing enough to get the 3 points, picking up wins on the board, and it's gotten them to a championship. So it's a fantastic display from Sydney FC and Steve Corriker. As for Perth, you feel for them in one sense because they did finish on top of the table and they were the premiers, and there were 56,371 people who came, majority of whom were Perth Glory supporters. So it is disappointing that all those people came to see a loss, but in the same sense, Sydney FC fans would have spent a fair bit to get to Perth, so I suppose you could be quite happy for them that their journey, they came away with a win.
Yes, congratulations to Sydney FC, who did take out the title. Now, as a result, between the two teams, there were a total of 52 crosses, 26 for each, for a total of 2 shots on target. Both of them went to Perth Glory. Sydney FC did not have one single shot on target and yet managed to take out the A-League Grand Final.
They had one shot that went pretty well on target. It was in the back of the net, albeit was ruled offside. Yeah, very interesting to see that. But they did well to keep Perth Glory out, I thought, too. Their big players, Castro, Keo, when he came on, Economides, didn't really create a whole heap. A lot of half chances here or there. I'm not sure whether the surface had anything to do with it. It didn't look as though it was in the best shape. It did have an AFL game on the Friday night. Might have been a different result elsewhere. We're not sure, but it did go to penalties. And unfortunately, unfortunately for Perth, Sydney managed to put 4 in, and Perth only scored 1. But it was a very underwhelming penalty shootout, because compared to last week's against Adelaide, where it was just so dramatic right up until the end, Sydney FC just took their chances, and Perth Glory, their bad luck from penalties seemed to continue.
And before we get to the penalty shootout, let's just talk about that turning point in the game, in the first half, around the 28th minute, when there was the controversy surrounding VAR and the fact that Michael Zullo was played in behind and put a ball in that ultimately, you touch on, Matthew Sparanovic put into the back of his own net. The linesman raised his flag for an offside, despite replay showing Zullo was in fact onside, but VAR opted not to reverse the decision.
Yeah, it was really an interesting one. The only way I could justify it is VAR is meant to intervene for clear and obvious errors, and unless they thought that decision was in that grey area that we hear and speak so much about, that's the only thing I can think of. But from what it seems, and from all the footage and from all the angles that we've seen, it was quite obvious that Zullo was indeed onside. And generally, you'd think that the benefit of the doubt goes towards the attacking team when it's very close. In this case, it didn't. And like we said, had Sydney FC not won, there would have been significant backlash. It would have been VAR ruins a second straight grand final. And thankfully, we don't have to speak about VAR. We can speak about Sydney FC and them winning their fourth championship.
I just want to pose a question to you, though. So you touch on the fact that we've all seen these Fox Sports replays where they've drawn their own line on the screen to show that he is clearly onside. Do you think that line could be wonky? Is it actually, in fact, straight?
Well, that would have been in post-production. I don't think the VAR would have had footage of that line.
No, exactly. So VAR, inside their little VAR hub, they have access to their own camera angles, which the broadcaster does not. So I would love to know what they see compared to what we see, because somehow I think that they would be quite different.
Yeah, and that was one of the big complaints from VAR this season, is when we had those controversial moments, is that they're seeing something different to us. And it's why a lot of people and supporters were up in arms about VAR and questioning its place in our game. And like we said, I think if it's that close, generally the rule of thumb, well, it's almost an unwritten rule, is that the attacker gets the benefit of the doubt, which they didn't. And we've been hearing a lot that the referees, especially the linesmen, that if they're not sure, to not put their flags up. And this one was, as we know, a very close call. So the linesman did put his flag up and flagged the offside. But, yeah, it was one of those ones. VAR probably should have intervened, I think, but it didn't. And at the end of the day, it didn't really matter, did it? Because Sydney FC did get the win.
Well, that's exactly right. But I wonder if, because we saw throughout the A-League, the referees after every round would write a spiel based on the decisions at the weekend that happened, where VAR was used. I wonder if they'll do that for this A-League Grand Final to clear up what the thought process was behind this.
Well, they could, and it would be good to see. Given that there's no real backlash to it, or no significant backlash, they probably won't feel the need to do it. And given that Sydney FC won, the FFA or the referees will probably come out and say that they support the decision because they can't really upset too many people about that. The goal, if it had stood, it would have changed the game completely, though, in saying that. Perth Glory, I'm sure, would have really come and hit Sydney FC quite hard. So you are right, it did change the game, especially considering there were no goals scored. So you would have thought that had Sydney FC scored that early goal, the game might have finished in 90 minutes.
That's exactly where I wanted you to go, Athos. If that goal had have stood, no doubt Perth Glory would have taken a lot more risks. And there probably would have been, I'm not saying that there wasn't enough urgency, but there would have been that little bit more urgency to score, and therefore we could have seen a different result.
Yeah, 100%. We know that towards deep into stoppage time, the players and the managers, their attention and focus would slowly be shifting towards extra time and conserving energy and making certain moves. So I think that's absolutely right. It would have created a whole heap of urgency, especially for Perth Glory straight after the goal. We know that they're a fantastic attacking team, and that would have really buoyed them and motivated them to go grab a goal of their own. Sydney FC, who knows, they might have gone on to score another, but I think that's just too many hypotheticals. In the end, I thought it was a really well-worked game from both teams, the 90 minutes. It wasn't as exciting as maybe we would have hoped. It wasn't as attacking and as many goals. It was more so of a chess match, both teams willing to suss each other out, not willing to make any urgent risks. But at the end of the day, I think it was a great occasion. There was a great crowd, many of whom dispersed fairly quickly and didn't want to see Sydney FC lifting the trophy. But it is a record grand final attendance, which all people in Perth can be proud of.
Hey, that certainly has to be celebrated. That number again, 56,371, filled Optus Stadium in Western Australia. What do you think that is a reflection of? Because throughout the season, we've seen a lot of varying attendances across all different matches, but nothing like this. And now at the end of the A-League season, we see a record crowd over the whole of the A-League era.
I think it's reflective of certainly Perth Glory doing very well this season. As we know, Perth is a football hub. They were reaching crowds, you know, in the 40,000s for grand finals in the NSL. Fun fact, in 2002 and 2003, Perth Glory played grand finals against Sydney Olympic, so it was almost like history being rewritten there, a nice little rematch. But it could be a number of things. There are a lot of football fans in Perth. It was at a decent time, 4:30 p.m. on a Sunday. The thing for Perth now is whether out of those 56,000, whether they can gain an extra, you know, 5,000 fans for next season. So would their attendance increase maybe from 10,000 to 12,000 to 15,000? I think if they had won, this probably would have been the case. But now it's all about keeping these fans and really ensuring that they stick around. The other thing is that this game meant something. It really mattered. And it goes to show that when there's something on the line and when games are as important as this, people will rock up to stadiums. I think that's a massive incentive for fans, if there's something to be played for, not just Perth Glory meeting the Central Coast Mariners for the upteenth time in a season.
Yeah, no doubt it reignited the passion there over in the West. Unfortunately, you've really got a feel for Tony Popovich. 4 grand finals, still yet to win one.
He knows a thing or two about Asian Champions League, though, and that's where Perth Glory will now shift their focus. Very excited to see them in the Champions League. I think they'll give it a red-hot crack. But you are right, very disappointing to see him. Considering this game was built up, you know, as the fairy tale for Perth Glory, at home, big crowd, sort of very similar to the Newcastle Jets last season, but they just couldn't get the job done. Perth Glory for me, though, from what we've seen this season, I think you can be confident to say that they'll be back next season. They'll be hungrier than ever next season. You don't see them slipping away. You don't, especially with Castro signing a new deal and Fornaroli there as well. So they should be right back up there next season.
Hopefully they'll be able to retain Chris Economides, because we know that there has been a little bit of interest sparked from overseas clubs for him.
Yeah, we know he's a great talent, star player. As an Australian football fan, as much as you'd love to see him staying in Australia, I think if there's an opportunity for him to go somewhere to Europe to further his career and gain some more experience overseas, he still is very young. I think he has to take that opportunity.
Really interesting, though, Athos, talking about age, the oldest starting 11 in an Australian grand final ever was actually Perth Glory's in the one last night. Mm-hmm. 31.9 years old. Underneath them, 30.5 went to the Western Sydney Wanderers back in 2016. And the third highest, or the third oldest starting 11 in an Australian grand final was actually Sydney FC also last night, 30.1 years old.
So what do you think that says about the league? Does it say anything? Is that reflective of anything in the league? We know in the A-League, the average age is actually towards that number, towards the higher end. And even though there are a few younger players, it is dragged out because you've got players like Castro and Keo in the side who are on the northern side of 30. So that is probably why the average is skewed so highly.
It is. And you touch on Sydney Olympic. They actually had the youngest starting 11 in an Australian grand final back in 1989, and that was 23 years old.
Wow, that is incredible. That's very young.
Very young, isn't
it? Very young.
But nothing else has come close to that.
No, not in the A-League era, and I think it's still where we're at in the A-League. We'd love to see some younger faces. We saw Jake Brimmer come on late in the piece last night. For Sydney FC, we know Daniel De Silva has been a good part of their team. Trent Bahagia was another young player who did his ACL at the start of the season, and he would have played a massive part for Sydney without a doubt. He'll come back next season bigger than ever. But from young players, we must also speak about a few of the older bodies. Alex Brosk and Brendan Sandilow played their last professional games. One went out as a championship-winning captain. The other went out without lifting any silverware, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was unfortunate to see Broski being booed as he was walking off, as he was being subbed off for his last ever A-League game. But what a career he's had.
He has been the epitome of Sydney FC these last few weeks. Him and Steve Corica, in the last few years, I should say, him and Steve Corica have really driven the standards at the club. And Alex Brosk is one of those players who every year you thought, okay, this was going to be it. This was going to be it. He's going to hang up the boots. But he just keeps going and he keeps finding the back of the net. And he must be a fantastic spiritual leader for the club to keep driving those standards. He's been through some great times and some tough times with Sydney FC, and that's why he's such a fan favourite, and he will go down as an A-League legend now that he's retired.
And also very unfortunate to see how the narrative ended for Brendan Santelab.
It was unfortunate, especially considering how his penalty kick turned out. On the one end, though, it is a case of if he scores that with his last ever kick, he goes down as a legend. You know, remarkable. His last game, he had the audacity to do a panenka and he scored. But unfortunately, as with all penalties, there's a risk of it being missed and it being saved. And Andrew Redmayne stood his ground, and it's almost like he knew it was going to happen. And that was probably the turning point of that penalty shootout. As soon as Redmayne saved that, you could almost lock in that Sydney FC were going to win. That was a significant moment. Unfortunately for Perth, they weren't able to recreate their heroics the week before against Adelaide United, because that was an outstanding penalty shootout. Sydney FC had clearly practiced, and as we mentioned, that was the third penalty shootout which they had won, and also won for the record books. Sydney FC is now the only A-League side to win two A-League grand finals away from home.
Wow. Incredible, isn't it?
They did it in Melbourne in a penalty shootout as well, and they also did it last night. So they are a very good side when it comes to grand finals. We speak a lot about Melbourne Victory being a final side, but this Sydney FC side is probably just as good.
Maybe it's the experience that really shows up.
Yeah, that it is. And we saw Reza Gulshanashad scoring the winning penalty. I think if you were to pick anyone just to score the winning penalty, you might pick Ninkovic or Brosk, but Gulshanash had stepped up and it was actually a very well taken penalty, very well struck. So a good way to win the game, I thought, for Sydney.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Louise Taffer with Athos Syrianos. And we're going to cross now to the Herald Sun's Dave Davutovic. Dave, thank you for coming on the show.
G'day, guys.
Dave, a bit of a heartbreaking way for Perth Glory to wrap up the season.
Yeah, you really feel for them. I mean, firstly, kudos to Sydney FC because they had a fantastic season. And, yeah, I mean, deserved winners, I thought, on the balance of yesterday, although it really could have gone either way. But, yeah, I guess you asked me about Glory. And, you know, considering they were the dominant team all season and finished top, and I guess just the narrative around the Glory's barren run in the A-League era, you know, their glory days in the NSL. And I was at the grand final, and you really sense that the city and the state has fallen back in love with the Glory, a record grand final crowd, and would have absolutely gone off had they have won. But in the end, it was there's a lot of empty seats by the time Sydney FC lifted the trophy. So yeah, grand final heartbreak yet again for Perth Glory, and yet again for Tony Popovich.
Yeah, they did filter it pretty quickly as soon as that last penalty from Gulshanashad was scored. Dave, take us through what the atmosphere was like at the ground. We know a lot of people during the week said that there would be maybe a lot of theatre goers, but when you were there, did it feel like there were 56,000 genuine football fans watching?
Oh, look, I mean, that's a difficult question to answer, but, you know, it was a record crowd, you know. Fact, the TV ratings were very good. The atmosphere was fantastic. I mean, it got better as the game wore on. You know, there was no magic moment, I guess, for them to all really, you know, lift and for the crowd to erupt. But, yeah, it was a great, great atmosphere. And it's a ripper stadium. First time I've actually been there. And, you know, it's an oval stadium, but, you know, it's a beautiful new stadium, absolutely packed out. I thought it was a wonderful spectacle. Looked great on TV as well. So, yeah, I think it's really important to end the season on a positive note because, you know, it has been quite barren. I think we've spoken about it a few times in terms of TV ratings, to a lesser extent crowds. So, yeah, just to finish on that note, I think it's really important for everyone to really just, I guess, have a positive taste in their mouths going into an off-season where, you know, I think the winds of change will really come into effect.
And speaking of TV ratings, according to Media Week, 263,000 just from Channel 10 were watching last night. How important do you think it is for us to have the A-League on free-to-air?
Yeah, no, I don't have the Fox ratings in front of me, but I think they're in the high, in excess of 150,000, 160,000 as well, so collectively over 400,000. Look, free-to-air in the Australian market, at the moment, I think is a very important factor. You look at you know, the impact that it has on the big codes, be it AFL, rugby league, cricket, and, you know, I guess the one where football can really, I guess, where there's a real synergy is probably the Big Bash and Channel 10. The effect that Channel 10 had on, you know, the Big Bash, just really incorporating it into their, you know, into all their various programming and the cross promotions and all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, I think that's what, you know, when you look at 10's coverage this year, I mean, even in the grand final, there wasn't a hell of a lot of, you know, promotion. It's been pretty much a simulcast sort of scenario. So I think where the game's at, I think it's really important to find, you know, a good, solid free-to-air partner and one that's really going to help promote the A-League competition and football in general.
We're speaking to the Herald Sun's David Davutovic about last night's A-League Grand Final, won, of course, by Sydney FC on penalties. And the Joe Marston medal for the best on ground in that match was awarded to Milos Ninkovic. And we spoke a lot about the matchup between Ninkovic and Castro, and Ninkovic got the chocolates in the end. Dave, what did you make of Steve Corica's post-match comments about Ninkovic being perhaps the best number 10 at Sydney FC and the greatest marquee at the moment playing in Australia?
Did he say he was best number 10 in Sydney's history, or
That's what he said, that he surpasses Del Piero as the best number 10 at Sydney FC.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Del Piero is an interesting one, obviously, with, you know, here for 2 years. There's no doubt Ninkovic has had a bigger effect on, you know, Sydney FC purely as a footballer than Del Piero. But, you know, once you incorporate crowds and TV ratings and all that, I mean, Del Piero in his 2 years had a pretty positive effect. Yeah, Ninkovic has been outstanding. I mean, a lot of the pre-game discussion was centred around Diego Castro, but, you know, Ninkovic, obviously, his team got over the line, and he's just such a fantastic, intelligent player. Just watching him, you know, live, his ability to, you know, really find space and beat a player and just buy himself a bit of time and space with, you know, a little touch, the roll back, drop of the shoulder. He's a, you know, he's an absolute delight to watch. So, I think Steve Corica, who was a pretty handy player himself at Sydney FC, albeit in the twilight of his career, can't disagree with his comments.
And, of course, as we mentioned before you came on, Melbourne Victory just couldn't keep themselves from being in the centre of attention. They, of course, announced today that Kevin Muscat has stepped down essentially as head coach. And after 14 years at the club, both as a player and manager, he leaves a tremendous legacy behind him.
Yeah, pretty hard one to keep under wraps, to be fair to Melbourne Victory. And I think, to give them credit, they actually held off the announcement until after the grand final, even though it was obviously evident that this was in the pipeline last week, so they didn't want to take away from the grand final. So I thought that was quite classy from them. But, yeah, it's the end of an era. 14 years, Kevin Muscat has been at Melbourne Victory. He's been involved in every single game as a player, a bystander, obviously injured or suspended on occasions, and then as an assistant coach and later a coach, and a very successful one at that. And, you know, I mean, it's going to be really, it's going to be really different going into next A-League season without Kevin Muscat being at Melbourne Victory. Just, you know, he's been part of the furniture, used to seeing him there. So, yeah, with Carl Valeri also retiring, he's been there for, 4 or 5 years. So, yeah, real sort of, I guess, new chapter, changing of the guard for Melbourne Victory. But well done to Kevin Muscat, because, you know, he cops a lot of flack. And there was a lot of question marks about him as a coach when he first got the job, and I was, you know, fairly critical of him a long, long time ago. But I thought he deserved the job when he got it, and you know, he's had fantastic success with the two titles, and every year they've been contending. Unfortunate that it sort of ended with a, you know, such a heavy defeat, 6-1 at Sydney FC last week. But I guess he's got a fantastic opportunity on Wednesday night to, go out on a high in their final Champions League game against Sanfrecce Hiroshima, albeit a dead rubber.
And even as a player, wherever Kevin Muscat went, he was loved so dearly by the fans. We know at Millwall, while he was there, he might have been hated by the opposition, but the fans really loved everything he brought to the club. And even the same at Melbourne Victory, as you mentioned, he's been a part of every game, and he's been significant for driving the standards internally, as we've heard, and really getting the club to where it is today.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, you're right. There's no one sits on the fence with Kevin Muscat. He's either loved or loathed. I mean, he always really played on the edge and, you know, overstepped the mark numerous times, as we saw, but in the A-League. But, yeah, he's a guy that wears his heart on his sleeve. And, you know, I think anyone who's played with him will say that they love playing with him, because he just, you know, he doesn't leave anything out there, and he's such a winner. And, you know, I think what got lost in the discussion with, you know, him as a player was the fact that he was a very, very good player. And, you know, he made other players around him look a lot better. You know, when Kevin Muscat left, a few other players probably didn't look as effective as they once were. But, he's a coach now, and he's carved a very successful coaching reputation. Where that takes him now, who knows? I think it'll be overseas. I don't think it'll be another A-League club. And it just wouldn't feel right, would it, Kevin Muscat being involved with another A-League club? So I think he'll enjoy his first sort of off-season, proper break in about 7 years, and then embark on the next chapter of his career.
And Dave, any word on any names who might be in line to succeed Kevin Muscat?
Not at this stage. Look, I think it's a question of first whether they go local or overseas. And, you know, I think considering, considering what's happened and some of the appointments that have been made in recent times, I can't see Melbourne Victory going local. I sense that they will head abroad to make their next appointment. So, obviously, they said they're in no hurry. You know, most of the European season's finishing as we speak, so obviously some coaches will be departing and whatnot. They'll be getting a lot of, CVs and expressions of interest. And, it's a really interesting one for them. It's a big appointment. I mean, I know Marco Kurtz's name has been linked in the last sort of 24 hours. He obviously had fantastic success at Adelaide United. But, look, they'll get no shortage of CVs and interest from overseas because they're a big club. Who knows? I think, like I said, they'll go overseas, but I can't really give you specific names.
Well, Dave, it sounds like you're at the airport, so we'll leave it there. But thank you for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. All the best.
The Herald Sun's Dave Davidovich joining us there, and very interesting time for Melbourne Victory as they look to appoint a new head coach to succeed Kevin Muscat.
That's right. And we will have a head coach on very shortly. Scott Miller, the head coach of Langwarrin and Fox Sports commentator, will join us very soon. But as Dave did touch on there, Kevin Muscat did announce that he was stepping down at Melbourne Victory today. And this is what he had to say in his final press conference for Melbourne Victory.
Why? The truth of the matter, you know, maybe intuition. I've just got a feeling, after 14 years that the time's right. You know, I just feel that it's a time's right for a number of reasons. It's great that I can sit here and, we walk out of the room having, a celebration that we walk out amicably rather than you guys just receiving a release because we can't sit in the same room together.
Both parties have agreed that together that this is the right time to part ways. Kevin will leave. Melbourne Victory is a true club legend after an incredible 14 years. He spent just shy of a quarter of his life within the walls of this club. As a player and a coach, Kevin Muscat has been involved in every piece of Hyundai A-League silverware that this club has achieved. He's been incredibly successful as both a player and a coach, and he'll go down as one of the most influential figures in Melbourne Victory's history.
With thanks to Melbourne Victory for that audio. Yes, if you are just joining us, Kevin Muscat has announced he will be stepping away from Melbourne Victory after 14 years. His last game will be on Wednesday evening in the Asian Champions League against Sanfrecce Hiroshima at Amy Park, and that'll be his 215th and final match as manager.
I tell you what, I'd love to see the Melbourne Victory players really get behind this game and give 100% for Kevin Muscat. I think Kevin Muscat really deserves a fitting farewell. He deserves a big performance from Melbourne Victory. I'm confident Victory will field a strong squad comprised of Honda, Toivonen, and all their star players. And you'd really want the players to play for Muscat and wear their heart on the sleeve, as you know he did on every occasion when playing and managing for the club.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see how much it really means to him because he was in tears in the press conference today and the emotion was really, starting to come to the fore.
Yeah, that's right. He was a very passionate manager person. And it's not often that you see him get that emotional as a coach. We know he was very fiery as a player, but he was a lot more placid as a coach. And he broke down today. It was a press conference that was very profound and reflective. It's great watching and great listening. I encourage everyone to go back. And he leaves a great legacy behind. So much silverware. Victory's first ever FFA Cup. He won two championships as a manager, including that one against Newcastle last season from fourth, which no one is yet to do. So he's ticked a few big boxes as a manager as well as a player.
Yes, in a statement, he also said this is not a decision made overnight or taken lightly. He believes that it is the right time for him to refresh and in time seek a new opportunity after giving everything he's got to the game and to Melbourne Victory over the past 14 years. We're going to bring another coach into the discussion now, and joining us is also Fox Sports analyst Scott Miller. Scott, thank you for coming on the show.
Evening, guys. How are we doing?
Scott, we're just talking about Kevin Muscat stepping away from Melbourne Victory. Surely this wouldn't have been an easy decision for him.
No, surely not. And I was just listening to the back end of your conversation there, and it must be said what a legacy he's left. And that is a true word. He's been a club man. He's so respected amongst the club. And as you said, he's done it as a player and a manager. And essentially, he did his apprenticeship as well for a couple of years as an assistant coach, and then progressed into the head coach's role. And I must admit, having coached for a number of years, I can understand why. Potentially the burnout, the mental fatigue, and wanting to give everything for a certain club. Sometimes you are going through stages in life where you are mentally fatigued and tired, and it's time for a rest. And I think we can all really applaud what he's done at the club.
He's done a tremendous job. He's been there since day one. He's seen a lot of success, a few tough times as well, but for most of it, he's been a big part of why Melbourne Victory is the most successful club in Australia. Scott, a pretty intriguing grand final played out last night, won by Sydney FC on penalties. What did you make of the occasion?
It was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I sat there last night watching it, and there's no better environment to see a packed stadium full of soccer fans wanting to watch an entertaining game. And fortunately, albeit Victory didn't make the grand final, my pick was it would be a Victory in Perth. For me, Sydney were far better. The way they executed their game plan yesterday, I know people can talk about how Perth created more chances, but I just saw an assuredness to Sydney all throughout the game, and you saw key players like Ninkovic working so hard defensively to stop that threat down that left-hand side and to support Grant. And I just think as a unit and as a team, they just really performed fantastically yesterday.
And as a manager, is there a stage during the 90 minutes where you start maybe mentally preparing for extra time and beyond? Does that ever cross your mind as a manager?
You know what? It's actually the opposite. You're actually praying that it's not going there, because ultimately, once it does go to those penalties, it's a luck of the draw, as everyone speaks about. And you saw the execution of a few penalties last night from players that any other given day would probably put them away. So at that point, as a manager, you're thinking, well, listen, all that hard work is now defined by 5 seconds of a player running up and the decision from a goalkeeper or poor execution. And it is unfair, but it's the way sometimes, because ultimately the body would not be able to play any longer than the 120 minutes you'd suggest based upon the output of some of the players towards the end. But cruel way to finish, but it comes down to the composure, and Sydney were the ones on the night.
And what do you think, like from a coach's perspective, what would have Tony Popovich told his players at the end of normal time and then going into extra time?
I was watching that quite clearly, and it was interesting to see two camps. My observations of Sydney and Corica was very much a motivational-driven team talk. You could see his animation. It was all about the sort of group and probably how hard they had worked. Where on the flip side, I was watching Tony sort of communicate to his team, and it looked more structural or tactically sort of approach. So, as I said, two different approaches from two different managers, and ultimately it's really defined by what you see previously going into that, and how you think you can affect the game. But I spoke on Friday about the defensive organisation of Sydney, and they executed that perfectly, albeit that Perth did cause them problems. It was safe problems, in my opinion, and the execution was superb.
Even though there were a number of new players at Sydney FC this season, there was a decent contingent of players who played last season. Would Steve Corica have used not making the grand final as motivation, especially going into extra time as penalties for his players?
Say that again, mate, sorry.
Given Sydney FC didn't make the grand final last season after being the best team by far, do you think Sydney FC would have, Steve Corica would have used that as motivation, especially in extra time and heading into penalties?
No, you know what, it's an odd one. And how you affect players can be done in so many different ways. However, if you're centralising that motivation to one element, that's dangerous, because sometimes players look too far ahead. I think Steve Corica looks like the type of manager that wants consistent development in his team. He wants a modest team, but a team that works for one another as well. And that's what I saw. I saw a continued growth throughout the season from their performances. If you think back 4 to 6 rounds in, people were questioning the decision. However, from that point onwards, it was very self-disciplined. The team orientation was very disciplined as well. And and they picked up points very quietly. And suddenly we find themselves in the final, playing against a top team, and came away with the result in their favour. I just think based upon consistency and the right mindset going into the game.
And Steve Corica did field an unchanged starting 11, but as for Tony Popovic, he made one tactical change with Andy Keogh, who was benched.
Yeah, I noticed that, and brave decision, but he knows how he wants to upset the back four of Sydney, and ultimately probably wanted to affect it with Keane's speed and mobility in behind the back four. Interestingly enough, it was the first sub, essentially, so he did have a plan A and plan B. What he was trying to do is expose the space in behind so Castro can get more space in front of the back four, and ultimately didn't come off because at times we saw Castro dropping so deep into that mid-third, he was behind the first press. And for me, I'm sitting there going, Steve Corrick will be thinking, this is a great result. Mm-hmm. We've got their most dangerous player pretty much in the back third, receiving the ball at times, almost as a first receiver. And any time you do that, you're in control because you can screen the passes in front and protect what you've got, as opposed to the Castro we've seen, the little key passes that you've seen in between the back four.
Yeah, it was built up as a great battle between Castro and Ninkovic in particular. But one of the other subplots to this grand final was the enthralling and very entertaining contest between Ryan Grant and Jason Davidson.
Yeah, it was exciting. First and foremost, their physical capacity is through the roof, both of them. You look at their output very late on in the game, none of them had really stopped. 1v1, they almost nullified each other slightly just with their determination and ability to go both ways. It was so interesting to see that battle. But, you know, it added another element to the game. And for me, what a final represents to both teams. And Ryan Grant's had a phenomenal year. He really has. He's been a standout for Australian soccer and most importantly, Sydney. But Jason Davidson, towards the end of that game, he was the main threat for Perth, I felt, down that left-hand side. And if anything was going to come, it was going to come from his side. So it just poised for more. And obviously them sort of standing up to one another created more intensity to the game, which is good to see, and passion, which is what we all love to see.
And Scott, what did you make of the VAR decision, and particularly the fact that if the goal had been given to Sydney FC in the first half, do you think that it might have changed the end result?
Well, I'm pretty sure I've spoken to a number of people today, and it wasn't offside. So, and I've heard a lot of people discuss the offside ruling, and if Fox Sports have the yellow line capacity to draw the line across the pitch, surely VAR should have the same technology. I don't understand that one bit. If you've got an expensive bit of equipment and you can't have Piero or Sports Code illustrating on the pitch the definitive straight line, which gives you the correct answer, I don't see the point in it. I really don't, because ultimately it's a person's opinion as opposed to the technology and what they've seen. And listen, forgive me if you disagree, but it looked to me as if he was in line, if anything, and not offside. So contentious, built to the intensity and the atmosphere furthermore. But I'm pretty sure we would have been hearing a lot more about it if Sydney didn't go on to win the game.
That's absolutely right. Thankfully, it hasn't overshadowed Sydney FC's fourth championship. We're, of course, speaking with Fox Sports commentator and head coach of Langwarrin, Scott Miller. And Scott, your Langwarrin team has a big FFA Cup match against South Melbourne this week. What's the feeling internally coming up against one of the biggest Victorian sides?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting for the team. It's a three-game week for these guys. We play on Saturday and obviously Wednesday evening, and then again on Saturday over in Geelong. So you can imagine these players don't get to play football that often. So the importance is on nutrition and sleep and recovery from Saturday's game's been great. But I'm sure the adrenaline of playing South Melbourne and the opportunity to represent the club at Lakeside will get them over the line. And ultimately, it's about respecting them, however, going there with the right mindset to compete, because anything's possible. And we do have a good team. We really do. But it just comes down to who's at it in the night, and we're preparing quite well.
And game one of the three this week happened on the weekend where you guys drew with Moreland. And from what we're hearing, it was a bit of a chaotic second half.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was. We conceded early on, and which was disappointing. So we changed a few things at halftime, and in our opinion, we controlled the game in the second half. We obviously scored a fantastic goal on transition there, and then really down to her own sort of downfall. We created a problem for ourselves, and then they went up 2-1, and then finally in the last kick of the game, Burgess stepped up and put one in the bottom corner. So entertaining game to the end, very passionate and exciting end for everyone that was there, not so much for the coaches. However, a great output from everyone, and it's great to get a point away from home, especially on the West.
Well, Scott, thank you for joining us, and all the very best for Wednesday night.
Yeah, well, guys, you're more than welcome to join us down there and come and have a look.
Will do, will do. Scott, take care. We'll speak to you soon.
All right, guys. See you. Bye-bye.
That was Fox Sports analyst and Lang Warren head coach Scott Miller joining us there to go through some of the A-League Grand Final and also touch on what's to come for his side.
Yeah, they got a big match, Lang Warren. They're fourth in NPL 2 East. They've done a tremendous job with Scott Miller at the helm. About to call him Scott Morrison for a second. He also had a big win on the weekend.
You've got voting on your mind.
It was a big weekend for all of Australia. We are going to move across to Europe very shortly. Is there anything else you want to mention in relation to the A-League? The season's done and dusted because we're going to enter the world's longest pre-season. So we're going to go into hibernation up until October 2019.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible that we do have like the longest off/pre-season. One other thing I do want to mention actually is the fact that Wellington Phoenix have confirmed more player departures today. 6 in total.
Yeah, they have. Nothing perhaps too out of the ordinary. Yeah, Nathan Burns was one of the players released, and he had played at the Phoenix before and was a great contributor. Unfortunately, wasn't able to get the most out of his time there as well. I thought he could have been a really important player for them when he signed, because we saw what Mark Gruden did with someone, with a lot of the players there, including Roy Krishna, reinvigorated him, really brought a few of his other players to light up. To life, I thought Burns would be someone who could really make an impact, maybe even as a substitute, but wasn't able to get the games and the goals that he's capable of.
And also joining him is Anthony Golic and also Justin Gully, Michael Kopczynski, Ryan Lowry and Killian Sheridan, who will all leave the club at the end of their current contracts, which is end of this week.
Yeah, and confident Wellington Phoenix will have another good season next year. Another big preseason. They know what to expect. Mark Rudin laid the foundations there with that grueling preseason. We're not quite sure what happened, but we know that it was very tough. And Stephen Taylor, who's played in the top flights in England for so long, said that it was the toughest preseason he's ever been a part of. So it must have been pretty good. And it's why that the Phoenix were so good this season and managed to make the finals. But yeah, that's it from us from the Australian side of things.
But let's touch on Australians abroad. Yes. As we moved into the European discussion.
Saw there was a fantastic story over in Schalke where local Canberra boy George Timotheu made his Bundesliga debut for Schalke.
Yes, that's correct. The 21-year-old centre-back started for Schalke in their nil-all draw against Stuttgart. So what has been a pretty tough time for George, because he tried to break into Sydney FC. He was in their youth team, couldn't get an A-League gig, and then moved to Sydney Olympic, and then got picked up by Schalke. And next minute, he is actually making his Bundesliga debut and almost, in a sense, overtaking the likes of Christian Theoharis, who's been at Borussia Mönchengladbach and been getting sparing minutes in the under-23s.
So tell me, Louise, you're all over youth football. How does this happen? How does a player go from being delisted from an A-League side to playing NPL New South Wales to getting on a plane, taking a massive risk and starting for one of Germany's biggest clubs? How does that happen?
I have no idea. Maybe it's in the Canberra blood. We've seen Tom Rogic move to Celtic.
We have, but Tom Rogic built a strong foundation in the A-League. He killed
did.
It for the Mariners, briefly at Victory as well, but more so at the Mariners, and then he went up to Celtic, and you said, okay, that's understandable. But to go from the NPL to the Bundesliga, where the A-League didn't want a look at you, it's baffling.
It is. It's remarkable. I think with the A-League, though, we know it can be a little bit subjective in terms of, now, I'm not saying this is relating to this situation in isolation, but I think that the A-League at times can be very subjective in terms of how far a player can progress and how far a player can't. I mean, if you get on the wrong side of a coach, suddenly you find yourself not able to move any further than where you're at. So I'm not quite sure, but I think with George, it's just a fantastic story because, as you touch on, he is a Canberra local. His younger brother, Anthony, was playing with Canberra United's academy, and that was in the NYL season, inaugural youth league season for Canberra United, who haven't had a team ever. Mm. And now he's making his way in Germany. To think if he's getting sparing minutes now that the Bundesliga has wrapped up for the season, if he can get a few minutes over the off-season and into their next pre-season, maybe he can continue to build on that and even forge a career in the Bundesliga.
Well, Schalke had a disappointing season by their standards. They finished nowhere near where they would have wanted to finish. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of turnover at that club and a massive opportunity for George to really impress ahead of what should be a big season for them. Also interesting to know that the 10 A-League clubs didn't want to take a punt on him, and you'd think that they'd almost take him in a heartbeat now, considering they don't have to worry about visas for him or him taking up a spot or anything. He could almost slot into any A-League side, considering he's playing over in Germany. But we'll start our European discussion in Germany, where Bayern Munich lifted league silverware for the 7th consecutive year.
Yes, they did. I was really hoping that Borussia Dortmund would edge them, but unfortunately, a massive win at home for Bayern München, and they've wrapped up yet another title.
And Bayern defeated Frankfurt 5-1 on the final day, and of course, Frankfurt were playing for the opportunity to finish in the top four. Unfortunately for Frankfurt, they now finish 7th and miss out on European football completely. Over on the other side of the country, Dortmund defeated Borussia Mönchengladbach 2-0, but despite this result, they weren't able to lift silverware. At one point this season, Dortmund sat 9 points clear on top of the table, but losses to Werder Bremen, Schalke, and even Bayern Munich, a 5-0 loss to Bayern Munich, just nullified that completely and ensured that order would be restored and that Bayern would lift the league trophy once again.
It's pretty heartbreaking for Borussia Dortmund because this is the closest that they've come since they actually won it back in 2011. And you'd think that, I don't think that this squad will pretty much be the same for next season. There'll be a bit of movement. You know, young Jadon Sancho, who's come from England, has just made a real name for himself this season. He's only 19, and in all competitions, 43 games, 13 goals and 16 assists. That is just incredible. Mm,
fantastic.
Because he's well up there with some of Europe's best over, the top five leagues.
Yeah, he's a great player, a great servant for the club, and his season would have been capped off perfectly with a trophy, but you'd think he'd be leading the team next season. They'll also be in the UEFA Champions League next season again. Their exit this season, I'm sure they'd want to improve on that, and they'll be looking forward to that in Germany. The top six, Bayern Munich, Dortmund, Red Bull Leipzig, Bayer Leverkusen, Borussia Mönchengladbach and Wolfsburg, they will all be playing in European competitions from next season.
And speaking of exits, but moving to Scotland, Socceroos veteran Mark Milligan has announced that he will be leaving Hibs after just one season.
Yeah, I saw that. Not sure what lies ahead for Mark Milligan. He might move to another Scottish club. We know the Australians are very much loved over there in Scotland, or he might look back to somewhere in Asia. Could he potentially make a move to one of the A-League's two newest clubs, I wonder?
Potentially, to be a final marquee for what could be his last season.
Could be. From what we're hearing, if South West Sydney are looking at Mila Jednak, imagine slotting Mark Milligan next to him. You've got two of Australia's greatest defensive midfielders lined up next to each other. I think that could be quite an exciting prospect.
Do you think that maybe Western United might beat them to the punch?
They might. They might. He's an experienced player. He knows a thing or two about the A-League and winning silverware in the A-League. And considering they've brought in a lot of young players, haven't they, Western United? So to have that calm, collected head on the field, and he can also put in a pretty mean tackle. So he'd be a great player for either one of MacArthur or Western United.
Even any one of the other clubs. We know that there are a number of clubs now without a head coach. So whoever comes in will have to you know, create a new team and start again.
Yeah, there are a number of coaches.
He could fit in at Adelaide United.
He could fit in anywhere he wanted. He could even return back to the Central Coast Mariners if he really wants.
Now, there, that would be a story.
That would be a really nice story. Also, sorry, or maybe Sydney FC where he first started off. Who knows where Mark Milligan will end up. In Italy, though, that competition is still going and the race for top four is really heating up. 3 points separate third from sixth with Atalanta, Inter, AC Milan and Roma all in the mix to finish in the top four and play Champions League. Lazio and Torino are meanwhile still outside chances to qualify for the Europa League.
It's very exciting because it'll all pretty much come down to the final day.
Yeah, and it was a pretty hectic weekend. Atalanta could have just about sealed Champions League for the first time in a long time after leading Juventus, but an 80th minute goal from Mario Mandzukic meant the spoils were ultimately shared. Same goes for Roma. They were held goalless by Sassuolo. But the real surprise from the weekend was their hopes of UCL football ended by in a 4-1 loss away to Empoli. Now, Empoli are currently one place above the drop in Italy. And they've got a big game next week against Inter. So the winner of that, it's a big game for both those sides because Inter are playing for Champions League and Empoli are playing for survival with Genoa. They're playing the 15th place Fiorentina. So if I was to put money on the game, you'd probably say Genoa will survive given they're playing Fiorentina, who aren't really playing for much, but it will be an exciting the race for top four is just as exciting as the relegation battle in Italy.
And even Atalanta, who are playing Sassuolo on the final day, and Sassuolo, as you touch on, got a draw against Roma.
Yeah, they really shook things up for Roma because pretty much all those sides in the top four could have sealed Champions League. We know AC Milan picked up a much-needed win against the relegated Frosinone. Piatek and Suso scored the goals. So a few of those sides did Milan a bit of a favour there, and all of a sudden Milan can return to the Champions League for the first time in a while.
And it was great to see, and I know you're not a fan of it, and I know a lot of people aren't a fan of it, but I really like, and I think I'm going to order it, Juventus's new kit. It was great to see Adriano Del Monte repping the brand new jersey at Juve Stadium.
Yeah, he was there for that game between Juventus and Atalanta, and he was donning the new kit. Mm. We also saw AC Milan released their new kits, and they've opted for the more traditional red and black stripes, and it looks sensational. I know many Milan fans in Melbourne will be donning that from next season onwards. We also saw that in Spain, the season came to an end. No real surprises there. Barcelona finished on top, followed by Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid finishing third, and Valencia in fourth. So the usual suspects there in Spain, though I don't think many would have expected Real Madrid to be that far off the pace at the end of this season, but given that they are Real Madrid, they're bound to bounce back next season.
Yes, you can expect a bit of a rebuild under Zinedine Zidane as he looks to do one better than what has gone on this season. But very interestingly, it is actually the first time ever top five league winners have all won back-to-back titles. So in France, Italy, Germany, England, and
Spain.
Manchester City, Barcelona, Juventus, PSG, Bayern Munich.
That is an incredible stat. Normally you can bank on four out of the five to go back-to-back.
All five.
We haven't seen that in a long time. We haven't seen an English Premier League side go back-to-back since Alex Ferguson's Manchester United squad. The fact that Manchester City were able to do it is remarkable, and that's a crazy statistic. And we will have hopefully new winners next season.
I hope so, just to give it a bit more freshness.
We want to see that in all competitions.
I don't want to see a bottleneck again. Want to see Bayern win it again next season.
PSG. We want to see Schalke up there. We want to see Dortmund up there. We want to see Lyon, Napoli, Milan, both Milan sides if they can do well, hopefully. We want to see a bit of change in the football landscape. As for England, of course, if the race for the title can be as good as this season, I think we're in for another treat next year. One more point on Italy. Napoli defeated Inter 4-1. So that's a massive result for them. And they did Milan a huge favour as well. And speaking of Milan, Ignacio Abate played his final home match for the Rossoneri, and he's been one of the club's most loyal servants in good times, and especially the last few years, which haven't been all that great. He's always put his heart on his sleeve, and he's very much a fan favourite among the Milan fans.
Moving to England and touching quickly on what's going on there, Manchester City rounded off an outstanding campaign, crushing Watford at Wembley to seal a historic, keyword, domestic treble. Unfortunately, they couldn't take out the UCL, but that is to be continued with Liverpool and Tottenham Hotspur.
That's right. It was a massive. They hit him for six. And considering it was a final, and you would have thought Watford would have shown something, but they had conceded seven goals in their previous two games. So perhaps you could have seen it coming. But a disappointing end to the season for Watford, who finished 11th in the Premier League. So pretty good by their standards.
Yeah, it is pretty good by their standards. Again, there'll be another club that will be looking to do better in the season to come, and also in the summer when all of the transfers start to happen, which is now.
And Pep Guardiola post-game said that winning the English treble, which no one has done, would means more to him than the UEFA Champions League. Do you think that winning the treble makes up for their early exit?
I don't think it does. And I've said this time and time again, because I think with the amount of spending that Manchester City have done, it comes close, but I think they need to get more success in the European competition that really matters. The UEFA Champions League, I'd like to see them get further.
I think if they were disgraced in the Champions League, it would be a totally different discussion. But considering, well, for about 20 seconds, they were in the next round, weren't they, before VAR.
That was an incredible
intervened.
Game.
Exactly. So that one really could have gone either way. It was a matter of centimetres. So they weren't disgraced in Europe. They just fell victim to a bit of misfortune. But I think, considering no one's done the English treble, I think it's a pass mark for Manchester City this season. And considering they won the league with 98 points as well, I think it's a job well done for them.
Men's side. Women, they've already done it.
Yeah, they have. They have, as Pep Guardiola reminded the reporters there.
And speaking of the women, before we wrap up, Lyon have continued their remarkable European dominance as they secure a fourth consecutive Women's Champions League title. That's all we've got time for today, but thank you for joining me here in the studio, Athos, and thank you for your company at home. If you've missed anything, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. We'll see you again at the same time tomorrow. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.